Personal foul. Unsportsmanlike conduct.
Astry tackled the quarterback. He's giving them business down there. That's a 15-yard penalty.
Well, Dal, we got some stuff happening just today that's breaking in the news.
Yeah, let's start with the Rays.
Let's start with the Tampa Bay Rays. I believe it was five of their players during their Pride Night against the Chicago White Sox, which I personally remember that game for the fact that we won 6-5 and took the series win. But apparently the rest of America...
No one cares about the actual game anymore.
As far as everyone that's not a White Sox fan seems to be concerned, this was the single most evil, heinous act ever committed by mankind, because five of the Tampa Bay Rays players opted not to wear the pride patch.
Why is it that we as people have to be so absolute anymore? I think about this all the time. I'm a nerd. I'm a Star Wars nerd. And I think back to, the prequels? And Obi-Wan Kenobi says, only a Sith deals in absolutes.
Yes.
I think about that all the time. And I'm like, everything has to be all one way or another. And I love this country. I really do. I think it's amazing. I think we're still a young country. We're still developing. We're still figuring things out.
I think England has coffee shops older than us.
Oh, I'll bet England has like, never mind. I'm not even going to get into it. Yeah, they probably got like things that you normally throw away that are older than us. But it's just, we as Americans, we tend to kind of ignore things for a long time. And then we go absolutely crazy, overcorrect back the other way. And we're seeing a lot of that right now. So, I mean, two examples. Here's two examples on both sides of what I think would be the aisle, quote unquote, here. So, people flipping out. What do you mean you're not going to wear the pride patch on Pride Night? You bigoted piece of crap. What is wrong with you? And then what do you mean you're not going to stand for the national anthem? You unpatriotic piece of crap. See how it's basically, I mean, you have people on both sides of what I assume would be similar ideologies. But why can't people just do what they want to do?
My favorite is if you go on any of the ESPN tweets, posts, anything, they showed the Tampa Bay Rays pitcher. I forget which one. I have him pulled up here. Let me just check his name. But he issued a statement, essentially, where he worded it as nicely as humanly possible. It was Jason Adam. Jason Adam, the pitcher for the Tampa Bay Rays, basically said, inclusivity is important to us, and it's important to me. The five of us that decided not to wear the patch, we did it because we are believers in Jesus, and we simply don't want to broadcast our support for the lifestyle, but we also feel as though we don't want to alienate anyone either. It's not a looking down on anyone thing. It's not a judgment thing. This is just a personal thing. And yet every single reply to it is still,
oh, mean.
You're the most bigoted, hateful, unbelievably disgusting.
And I guess that's where I'm at. We're not able to have a nuanced discussion about anything.
No.
No. You have to be all this way, or I'll have to be all that way. And if you are on either side of those, ooh, here it comes. Remember how last week I said people just throw the word racist around?
Mm-hmm.
Same thing here.
Oh, yeah.
So if... How is one person deciding not to do that make them hateful?
Well, and Deadspin, who is not exactly well known for their unbiased non-political sports commentary.
And I think they pride themselves on that.
Posted a whole article today demanding, they said, if Major League Baseball has any balls, They need to issue fines and suspensions, and people need to be, they need draft picks taken away.
Wow.
What? Well, first of all, the team needs to be punished. The team's the only reason it was organized in the first place. They said, hey, you know what? Randomly, we're just going to have a pride night. We've decided we will. And then five players said, okay, but we're not going to wear the patch. Okay.
this again, I'm not familiar with this, but you brought it up right before we went on the air. Episode of Seinfeld.
Kramer wouldn't wear the ribbon.
Kramer wouldn't wear the ribbon.
Ribbon bullies are real.
And again, we're not saying anything. You can, I want people to feel comfortable and free in our country. Mm-hmm. And that, I feel like that can happen outside your religious purview. And I guess what I'm saying is if you have a religious reason why you don't want to do something, fine. If you're an atheist, fine. I don't want to always have to be having this conversation where I remember once, first off, you and I are not of the same faith, but I remember I've spent a significant amount of my life doing religious things.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember once I was told I was working at Radio Shack, which is where I was working at going to college. And it was not a very long conversation. This lady pulled out a card out of her back pocket and showed it to me. And I'm not exactly sure what it was, but she basically said I was going to hell because of what was written on this card that was in her pocket. And I was like, okay.
So did you want the 24 or the 32-inch screen, ma'am?
Yeah, exactly. There is a real lack of tolerance, which is really, it's so ironic. The irony is so thick because the whole conversation is about tolerance. Tolerance for people so that they don't feel like they have to go home and be depressed to the point where they consider suicide and things like that. That works for a lot of stuff. It's not just for folks that are gay or folks that are trans or whatever. It's for folks. Hey, I'm a fat guy. I've been depressed and thought about suicide tons of times. There, I'll just throw that out there in my life. It's just interesting to me that in a world striving for tolerance for all, we can't even talk about it. We are so ignorant about what that must actually mean. Anyway, it's just, again, I feel like I've given examples on both sides of what's going on, so I feel good about
it. I'll say this, from the standpoint of being one of the players, I'm guessing the negative backlash, I mean, let's be real, probably has, what, a 1% impact on their mental health going forward. To me, the issue is, it's almost for those of you spending your time jumping on the internet and just...
Twitter.
You're just losing your head. You're red in the face. You're just, oh my goodness, I can't believe that Jason Adam wasn't wearing the patch on his right sleeve. Like, honestly, it's you that I'm probably more like, all right, I think maybe you need to calm down.
Yeah. So here's a prime example. I run the social media for our little company, which, again, fully ironic, because I hate social media. Hate it. I hate Facebook. I'm to the point where I hate Twitter, even though I've been on Twitter for about 15 years. I was on it very early.
Twitter and Facebook are like you talked about the aisle earlier. That's like the two polar opposite ends of like which irritating person you're going to run into on there.
Yeah. So anyway, so I posted this story and then I pushed it to our Facebook page because, you know, there's a lot of traffic that goes to your website from Facebook. Anyway, and I had this lady just say, you got to take that story down. I actually work at this place, and that is incorrect. You need to take this down. And I looked at it, I'm like, that's not what the story says at all. In fact, that's not even what the headline says. And I'm like, we're in a world now where we don't just react to headlines. We misread the headline, and then we react to that. And so I had to be the bigger person. And it's like, well, this is what it says. You know, clearly they hadn't read the article. I mean, they hadn't even correctly read the headline. And again, I'm not trying to be a jerk to this person, but why are we all so pissed off all the time? Can we please? Well,
for me, it's because I watch Chicago sports too much.
Well, okay, but at least you know why. I just, we're, yeah, can we all just mellow out just a little bit? That we don't have to be 0-60 pissed off all the time. Anyway.
We may not.
I hope that this has worked out to a point where it's, you should be able to do whatever you want in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And people are saying, well, then what if I think, you know, you should be able to have gay marriage and this and that. It's like, well, yeah, that's already done. It's done. They already said that was fine.
You can do that.
So these people that want to come after
Jason
me.
And Jason cannot wear the patch.
Yes. See how that works? Because we're free. We're free to do what we want. And again, some things get ignored and some things get oppressed and some things get messed up. And then we have to just, it's like when a teenager starts skidding out of control, and which is what America is. And then they overcorrect, and then what usually happens. You roll the car. Calm down. Just calm down. Take a breath, count to 10, and have a Coke and a smile, please.
All right. You ready for me to uncalm down real quick now?
Ooh, okay. Sorry. Yeah.
So the Chicago Bears are likely to be fined and punished for the fact that they scheduled a padded OTA practice earlier today.
Those bastards.
Yeah, which was not allowed. So they had to correct it on their schedule. And can I just say, though, looking into it a bit, and Tom, or Sylvie.
Okay.
Of the Tom, yeah.
Like Sylvie and Waddell, the long
and
time.
And Waddle, yeah.
Okay, I say it wrong.
Oh, Tom Waddle, the old Bears wide receiver.
I see, yeah,
the
90s. Oh, okay. I didn't know that's who that was.
Oh, yeah. He was fun.
I only know him from bit. I only know him from the radio. The fact that they're radio people.
No, he was our top receiver in the 90s.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's an impressive.
Oh, the 90s Bears. Ooh. That everyone talks about.
Yes. He must have had hundreds of yards.
Very likely. But anyhow, he made a point that I kind of agree with, and he said, you know, maybe this is a hot take, meathead take, but I kind of like it that the Bears were a little bit attempting to go under the NFL's nose, trying not to get caught and sneak in extra padded practices, because there's two teams that have been doing that for over a decade now, and that's John Harbaugh's Ravens and Mike Tomlin's Steelers have been punished several times for trying to sneak in extra padded practices.
Both of them have a pretty dang good winning record, too.
And if,
in fact, Mike Tomlin,
if you can try to be a little bit more like John Harbaugh's Ravens and Mike Tomlin's Steelers, I don't see why that's a bad thing.
Yeah, in fact, Tomlin's never had a losing record.
Never.
As an NFL coach, which is unbelievable.
Ugh.
To do it for a couple years, you know, when they bring it up and you've been coaching for like 3 years or something. Mm-hmm.
He's been coaching 15, since 07.
Yeah, like 15 freaking years. Even last year when the Steelers were like, oh, they're not very good. And yeah, until they made the playoffs. They still made the dang playoffs. I see what you're saying. And there's the old saying, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. That's the old NFL line.
It is towing that line, too, between, I'm not sure that it's competitively cheating. It's more cheating the collective bargaining agreement,
right,
that you're trying to.
Well, and the thing is, I mean, we live in a time where, did you really think you weren't going to get caught?
Well, true.
I mean, every one of those players.
But here's the thing.
Every one of those players is a brand. They have to build their own brand because they can, and their body is their brand. And you're having them do something that they're not going to get compensated for. Of course they're going to bring it up.
Well, it wasn't actually the players that busted him, because it was a voluntary OTA. So the ones that didn't want to show up just didn't show up. But the players all came and did it. It was the fact that they opened it to reporters. And some reporters leaked it to the NFL headquarters.
Is it leaking if it's open to reporters?
Yeah. So they actually, at the last minute, closed it to reporters. But not before some reporters already saw players walking out onto the field in pads. So basically, though, the way I see that this is basically going to happen is they're just going to pay their fine. Yep. They're going to go, oh, dang it. Here's some money, NFL. And they're still going to have gotten their 17th padded
practice.
Believe me, they've
wasted more money on other things than whatever that fine's going to be.
Yeah.
I, Here's the thing.
By the way, as someone that played a lot of high school and college football, when you hear limit 16 padded practices, that's pathetic. Wait, how do I get that deal? Come on.
Well, I look at that and, for example, the state where we're in right now in Wyoming, you have to have 10 practices before you're eligible to play in the first week, the first actual game.
Mm-hmm.
And the first three of, like, the first, like, the first three or four of those can't have pads. You can just be, like, helmets and shorts.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so, yeah, when you're talking about professionals and 16, it's like 16, that's like a week. I mean, because let's be honest, when they start preseason, they're going two-a-days. That's literally, like, just barely over a week.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's again, the NFL is so big now, and it makes so much money. I mean, you're talking about a thing that they can literally charge you $5,000 for wearing the wrong socks. And there's a guy that is his job to walk around for every team and go, your socks are wrong, $5,000. And then they don't even know where that money goes. Did you know that? These fines, the NBA is the same way, but the NBA doesn't bring in nearly as much as the NFL. So so like the fine, like, so let's mm-hmm. say Aaron Feely shows up and he's wearing you got your white socks on.
Yep.
But you're wearing those and you play for the Vikings. Or what?
This is a depressing time.
Even if it's just practice.
Well, I remember Brandon Marshall just straight up paid before he did it.
Yeah.
He paid in advance because Brandon Marshall suffered from bipolar disorder. And as part of mental health awareness, I guess the official color of mental health awareness is lime green. I didn't know that until Brandon Marshall told me.
And now you still know it.
Yeah. So he said... You know what? I have these. He goes, I couldn't find. He's a professional football player. Didn't like any of the cleats that were lime green. He took a pair of lime green tennis shoes, cut the bottoms of his cleats off, and super glued them to the bottom of these green tennis shoes, and paid his fine in advance because he said, you know what? It's Mental Health Awareness Month. I just want to wear green. Here's whatever it was. It was like $7,500 for the wrong cleats.
And that's what I'm saying. And you don't know where that money goes. It just goes into this, just toss it on the NFL pile, I guess. I completely agree that there are people who make millions of dollars just suckling at professional leagues' teat. Just because they know how the money works. They know how it comes in. They know there is so much cream to skim off the top that if you're on the inside, it doesn't matter. And that's just, I mean, think about that. How long does it take you to earn $7,500, Aaron? Longer than you'd like to admit, right?
Longer than I would be willing to pay to wear green tennis shoes to work.
Yes, yes. Same for me. That's why a little sidebar, and we'll come back to it. That's why that one time Peyton Manning wanted to wear the one shoes to honor Johnny Unitas, and they said, well, we'll fine you, and then he didn't. It's like, dude, you should have just done it. You're Peyton freaking Manning. You know how much money you have? Anyway, going back to that, it's just ridiculous how that all works. Stupid.
I don't know why this popped in my brain, too, but we talked tolerance earlier, and then we talked about Brandon Marshall, and it popped back up. Did you see the story from like a few years ago when Brandon Marshall bought a house in a gated subdivision in Florida, and he showed up the first day?
Yes.
And the guard wouldn't let him in because he said he didn't profile like the people that lived here, so he assumed AKA he was trying to break
he's
in.
He's black.
He's like, well, you know, he's dressed all shabby, and he's got dreadlocks, and I went, He what now? Why don't you just point to the thing that has caused you?
Why don't
to keep
you just say it? Why don't you just say it?
And dressed all shabby, like if you saw the video too, he's wearing what is probably like at least $2,000 worth of stuff all over himself.
It's probably nicer than what the guard was wearing.
Yeah, his t-shirt was a little baggy, but like he's wearing a watch that easily
off,
cost
man.
One of my paychecks.
Yeah, it's his day off, man. Yeah, stuff like that is absolutely
like,
crazy.
Wait a minute, that's Brandon Marshall. He played football like a mile from here in Miami, you idiot.
Well, it is Florida, man. Florida's America's armpit. Yeah, you heard me, Florida. What are you going to do about it?
Florida is like Australia if Australia were smaller and in America.
See, I don't want to badmouth Australia that way. There's things about Australia that I really like.
I'm not
Margot Robbie is from Australia.
I like Australia. I'm not trying to say, you know, that.
She's amazing.
Climate-wise, wildlife-wise, and just the weirdness of the people-wise.
Hugh Jackman?
Hey, Liam Hendricks is from Australia.
I'm just saying, those two people alone, those are like...
You say that like what I said was a bad mouth of Australia.
Well, kind of was. You compared them to Florida.
See, I like Florida, though. Florida is just weird enough to be entertaining. I am... As someone that will just use it as a vacation spot and then read about it on the news, Florida's great.
Oh, okay. See, I've never, this is where I have to come clean. I've never even been to Florida.
Oh.
But so I don't want to.
It's right there with, like, when people talk about, like, certain players and their I can't get this out of the league, get that out of the league. And my response is always, well, you know, if I knew, you know, it's always, you know, when a guy is like a turd. Or he's a loudmouth and he won't shut up. And part of me goes, you know what? Yeah, if I had to, like, be that guy's roommate, I'd probably... Richard Sherman. I'd probably hate Richard Sherman if I was his neighbor. As someone that exclusively uses him as an entertainment median, I love Richard Sherman. I'm like, well, I don't have to interact with him. I just get to watch him be funny.
I'd love him on my team.
He's going to run his mouth, and the fight's going to start, and he's going to intercept a pass here and there, and it's all going to be so much fun to watch.
Which is funny, because he's the one that, when Washington made the playoffs in 2012, see, that's how rare we make it. I remember what year it was. But he got in the grill of Trent Williams after the game.
Oh, and Williams punched him.
Yeah. And see, I'm a Washington fan, and now it's funny, because right now, I like Richard Sherman way more than Trent Williams. and I'm even on Trent Williams' side when it comes to, hey, that Washington team really screwed me over. They did. They absolutely did a terrible job for him. Mm-hmm. But they're still my team. So, sorry, Trent. Maybe when you retire, maybe we'll see. If he retires as a Washingtonian football player, then we'll see. But I don't think he's going to.
Also, you know, while we're talking about staple players that got done dirty by the franchise, I remember when Brian Urlacher in 2012, his contract expired, and he was willing to take a pay cut, but he wasn't willing to take league minimum because he was still coming off a year.
Yeah, he's still Brian Urlacher.
Yeah, and the Bears were like, nah, walk. I am shocked to this day that they managed to get Urlacher 3 years later to come back and do the one-day contract thing. So he could retire officially Chicago, you know, fill out his paperwork and retire as a Bear. I said, he's a better man than I. Now, I'm a Bears fan, so maybe if it was but if I was, you know, being who I am, if I was, I don't know, an Arizona Cardinal for 14 years and I was a 9-time All-Pro.
Rod Tidwell from Jerry Maguire.
Yeah, and they did that. I don't know that I would ever, like, I might just, like, be, like, I'd be, like, actively a 49er fan on Twitter for the rest of my life. That's the kind of bitterness I have.
It's funny you bring that up because the guy who just, he was traded, or he went to the Rams, and then the Rams won the Super Bowl against the Bengals. The guard, the big guy.
Oh, you're talking about the tackle.
Wentworth.
Yeah.
Whitworth.
Yeah, Whitworth.
There's rumors like if he goes to the Hall of Fame, which he could, mm-hmm. that he would go in as a Ram. And I was just like, wow, can you imagine? Can you imagine how? Just let's be honest, the Bengals don't got much anyway, as far as a franchise is concerned. And
they got Joe Burrow
exactly. But what I'm saying is, and hey, Logan Wilson's on that team. I love Logan Wilson. But as far as that franchise compared to other franchises, mm-hmm. that is a cheapskate owner, and they do not have very nice facilities. It is not one of those, ooh, wow, I'm in the NFL now. It's kind of like, oh, my stuff was nicer in college.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it is. And it's just, and I look at that and go, just another reason for Bengals fans to go, oh, man, no one even wants to retire with us. That's why they should celebrate guys like Anthony Munoz, which I guess they do.
Who?
But
I was about to say,
I mean, talk about a guy who still reps the Bengals.
You put Whitworth in, and I don't know that it really matters that much to Bengals. Oh, good, we claim Whitworth in the Hall of Fame.
I mean, to be fair,
you already have the greatest tackle of all time in the Hall of Fame as a Bengals.
I think it's interesting. I get offended because I want as many Hall of Fame players for my team in the league as possible. And I already feel
the Bears already lead.
And
NFL
I already feel like
category.
And I already feel like my franchise has been discriminated against in the last 3 decades. And part of that is probably because of Dan Snyder.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just saying there are guys from Washington that should be in the Hall of Fame right now that are not.
I will say, if there's a player that played for us that is up for the Hall of Fame, I always root for them to make it.
Sure.
Assuming I actually think they deserve it. There's people talking about, oh, should Lance Briggs make the Hall of Fame? And a part of me goes,
no. It's not the Hall of Very Good. It's the Hall of Fame.
In my brain, Lance Briggs does not say Hall of Fame to me. But then I see some of the other people that they put in the Hall of Fame, and I go, what? Why do we put half these guys in the Hall of Fame?
The one that I always keep coming back to because he thinks he belongs in there is like Donovan McNabb. Have you ever looked up Donovan McNabb's career numbers?
Whether, you know, I know his numbers. Yeah. I actually think McNabb's numbers are less indicative of his skill. And even still, peak Donovan McNabb in my brain is still not a Hall of Fame quarterback.
To me, numbers and longevity and impact and contribution are all part of the equation of being the Hall of Fame.
I'm not as big of a stat guy, though, as people would assume.
Off of that, off of the whole, you know, you got to back it up with stats. There should be a point in time in a person's career where they were arguably the best at their position in the league. And if you can't say that, then they're probably not a Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm. And yet.
But I'm saying that's...
We got
that's,
Joe Namath
that's
and
me.
Bob Greasy.
And I'm not going to go into... I mean, those guys were in the Hall of Fame before I was even born. Weren't they? Probably. Anyway, but to me, if you can look at a guy and go, wow, he was arguably, during his time, the best.
Well, and the other one, you know, people like to bring up Edelman. And this is why
not a chance.
I occasionally like to say, yeah, I'm not really a stat guy. And it's for arguments like this when people go, well, look at his numbers and compare them to other.
Well, go ahead. His numbers aren't that great.
Well, his numbers are better than he was. That's my point.
But I'm saying career-wise, I think what did he end up with? How many yards? I'm going to look it up.
And playoffs. He's the second leading playoff receiver in history.
That doesn't matter.
But my point is, if you can, you should be able to look at a player. If the internet was evaporated and all you had was some film of him and that's all you've got. Hey, look. Here's several games of Julian Edelman. You should be able to decide with nothing but your eyeballs if he's a Hall of Famer. And Julian Edelman had never, at any point, dominated football like a Hall of Famer should dominate football. He just was on a team with Tom Brady.
let's just look at it just with numbers. I mean, the guy had 5,705 receiving yards. No. Cooper Kupp had almost 2,000. Actually, he did have over 2,000, including the postseason, this season.
And then other ones. Let me bring up some more. Ryan Fitzpatrick has more passing yards than 90% of the Hall of Fame. If anyone tries to tell me that Ryan Fitzpatrick should be in the Hall of Fame,
he shouldn't.
I will nard that person with my knee.
But here's the thing about Ryan Fitzpatrick. He is definitely, at some point people get on the bandwagon of, well, if they're not in the Hall of Fame, then they weren't very good. And it's like, what are you talking about? Being in the NFL is extremely rare. And again, Julian Edelman, off the top of my head, I can't tell you how many championships he has.
Three.
He has three.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, how many guys have three championships? That's a short list, man. I mean, if you're talking about the history of the league, there's not very many.
Well, to be fair, LeGarrette Blunt also has.
But I'm just. But what I'm saying is, in the history of the NFL, there's not a lot of people who can say, "Oh, I'm a three-time Super Bowl champion." And the same thing with Ryan Fitzpatrick. How many human beings have thrown for 35,000 yards and 223 touchdowns?
He was a very good journeyman career backup.
In fact, he was the journeyman. I mean, you could argue that. He started for 9 teams. That's a record.
It is.
But I guess what I'm saying is someone can have a good career.
I'd still have rather had Josh McCown if we're talking about journeyman.
And still not
this era.
Be anywhere close to being in the Hall of Fame. And that's both of these guys. Julian Edelman, I love Fitzpatrick, and I wish he would have had a healthy season with Washington last year because that's my team. I wish he would have. I loved watching him with Miami the year before. He was fun. People liked to watch him. His teammates rallied around him. But yeah, he's not even close to a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
But did he accomplish stuff that 99.9% of the world will not do? Yes, he did.
I love how this started, too, with Lance Briggs. And we're talking about Julian Edelman.
I know. But
I will say, I am torn on how I argue this, because let me say first and foremost, Lance Briggs is underrated. Vastly underrated.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
He's not a Hall of Fame linebacker. The problem is, he's better than some of the linebackers in the Hall of Fame, who also should not be Hall of Fame linebackers. I started this earlier. I was talking about Brian Urlacher. His son, Kennedy, has received 2 Division I offers thus far and is continuing to tour. He's received an offer from the University of Iowa and Arizona State. I have never seen Kennedy Urlacher play safety at the high school level. However, his last name is Urlacher, and he's going to play college safety. How soon can the Bears draft him?
Well, and I'll just throw this out there as someone who got to watch Brian Urlacher a couple times in college at New Mexico. New Mexico sucks, and they've been bad for a number of years. That offer should have been extended to this kid, like when he was 5. You know what, Kennedy? Kennedy, do you want to be a Lobo? Well, when you get old enough, you can be a Lobo. It should have just been sitting there. The fact that Iowa and Arizona State have offered him, and I'm assuming New Mexico has it. Maybe that's what I'm operating on, is the assumption. But yeah, they missed that boat, man. They should have offered that kid when he was still asking for candy on the sideline.
There's another one, too. Devin Hester's son, I believe, is entering the 7th grade, and the University of Miami has publicly stated that when he graduates high school, he's welcome to come to Miami.
See?
I hope he doesn't, though.
I hope he doesn't either. Yeah, but
please, go to Notre Dame, please.
Well, and I'm not saying I want Kennedy Urlacher to go to New Mexico. I actually like Albuquerque, and I like New Mexico fans.
And again, we don't even have any idea if Kennedy's any good.
No, we have no idea.
But his last name is Urlacher, and he's a 5-star recruit. How bad could he be?
He's a 5-star recruit?
I believe so, yeah.
Oh, well, no wonder they didn't offer him then. Not a chance.
It is weird to me, though, that he's supposed to be this super stud safety, but the 2 schools that he's gotten offers from thus far that he's toured are Iowa and Arizona State.
Hey, those are both Power 5 teams.
Sure. You know, Iowa, I hear 5-star recruit, and I give up sometimes, even as a Notre Dame fan. And I go, LSU or Alabama's getting that one.
It's interesting because it really does boil down, especially now with the name, image, likeness thing that's going on. Mm-hmm. But it reminds me a little bit, since I've been bad-mouthing New Mexico, I'll bad-mouth my team a little bit. It reminds me of, I can't remember his first name, Gustin is the last name. His dad was quarterback. Was a quarterback for the Wyoming Cowboys back in the 80s. And he was a 5-star blue chip recruit at linebacker. And so Wyoming, you know, they were one of the offers. But you knew he wasn't coming there. Which is like, it's too bad. You know, well, we got your dad. It's like, yeah. Well, anyway, he ended up going to USC. Which is only slightly, you know, warmer than Laramie in winter. But it's sometimes that happens. And I think that's probably what happened here with this Urlacher kid.
Oh, here's part of it. I didn't realize. I thought he was going to college right now, like he was touring these campuses. He's class of 2024. I think he's a freshman.
Oh. That's crazy.
Let's see here. Yeah, he's played 1 year of high school football for Chandler, Arizona.
Yeah, Chandler.
He was a varsity freshman. So you know what?
He's a stud.
Yeah, so actually, you know what? Let's assume he is good then. My point stands. How soon can the Bears draft Kennedy Urlacher?
But yeah.
Put him next to Roquan.
Legacy kids.
The new Urlacher and Briggs. Because, you know, my dad occasionally, and he says it mostly as a joke sometimes, but it's funny how often it ends up being right. When, like, I remember all the Matthews that kept coming out of the draft, and my dad kept saying, I never watched any of these kids play football, but I hope the Bears take one of them, because how bad could they be?
Yeah.
Their last name is Matthews. And Clay ended up being drafted by the Packers.
Well, especially that
had
family.
A pretty good career. Then Jake, who's down in Atlanta, the right tackle, arguably one of the top three tackles in all of football right now.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Of course he is.
Maybe we should have done that.
Of course he is. The guy's probably been learning tackle offensive line technique since the family barbecue when he was four.
It is funny to me, too, and I know this seems so obvious, but this isn't always how it works, that literally the lineage of the Matthews family, of Clay and Bruce, all the kids that come later play the same... Like, it's the cousins that keep playing the same position as their dads did. And it was Clay Matthews Sr. was a linebacker, and then Clay Jr. and Bruce... Clay Jr. was a linebacker. Bruce, who was Clay Sr.'s nephew, says, I'm going to play guard. And then Bruce's son plays offensive line. And then Clay the third and Chase Matthews, who are both Clay the second son, both linebackers.
How are you keeping track of this?
And I go,
he's just rambling this off. Holy cow. I don't even know my own cousins that well.
The literal instant that Jake Matthews... has a kid. Like, he announces it on Twitter. He's holding his baby. And he's like, it's my son. Look, it's little Jimmy Matthews. The Bears need to offer Jimmy a contract right then and there. Say, hey, 22 years, you're going to come play tackle for the Chicago Bears.
See
you understand?
Then. See you in 2044. when we're called the digital furry animals or something. Who knows how dumb things
and
will
of
get
course,
by then.
Like, all the ones I know are all Bears players. You know, these kids that are, like, high schoolers and below. Because, you know, I just follow the Bears players on Twitter and stuff. But there was a video, by the way. You know, I'm talking about how badly I want Kennedy Urlacher to be a Bear here in, like, 8 years. I don't know how soon we can get a seventh grader into the pro level. But Devin Hester's son, there's a video of him, too, back when he was in third grade, playing flag football with a bunch of adults. And legitimately making some of them fall on their faces. It was just like a goof around. He was like at a practice with a bunch of full-grown adults who were there to play rec flag football down in Florida. And Devin Hester, is, you know, Devin Hester, I think, was playing. And he's like, here's my son. He's a little third grader. Tossed his son the ball. And he's probably faster in a straight line than I am. Straight up. I am a 26-year-old adult man. Devin Hester's third grade son could probably beat me in a race. He's in seventh grade now. I probably know he could beat me in a race now. This, he's like making these adults. And then there was the clip of him at like his youth football camp. And that was, I would have sued if I was the parents of any of the other kids that were in that video. Because the whole video was just, here's Devin Hester's son doing unspeakable things to the ankles of other children.
Just tell him to stand there and watch then.
And I went, oh my heaven. This kid is already an NFL player. He's like eight. What is this?
How about some hockey?
Oh, you know what? Let's talk about some hockey. Was that?
That is a was that a great game last night or was, on Monday night or
was
what?
That the closest series to have ever ended in a sweep in NHL history?
It might be. Oh my gosh. I mean, yeah, there was the 4-0 game.
McDavid did everything in his power.
But
he tried.
Oh my gosh. But I mean, what's funny is,
and was that a high stick, Dal, in your opinion?
I will quote the video and say, holy Schmidt, that was close.
That
the guy,
there's just simply no camera angle. The guy, I think that's
the guy for that was, they were covering it. The color commentator, he's like got his full Canadian. Oh my, holy Schmidt, that's, oh, sorry. Sorry. Just, he swears on the air. It was awesome. Yeah, I think it was fine.
Yeah. I mean,
mainly because I'm an Avalanche fan.
Well, and I'm definitely one of these guys. I don't know how you are. I am in the spirit of the rule. I like to say that a lot. It's been passed down on me. I like to think competition should be about who outcompetes the other. Which is why I am like stuff like that. Here's where I stand on it. If he were 1 centimeter above the bar, there are people that are so legalistic about sports. Like, then it's not a goal.
Yeah,
it's not because it's not because it's not.
They're the ones that call in, they're watching the Masters on TV and they call in some guy who does some obscure, he moved a blade of grass and now he should be penalized because I saw it on TV.
Yeah. I am a spirit of the reason that rule exists is so that you can't reach your stick up in the air and try to pull pucks that are 9 feet. And mostly it's a safety thing. It's so that you don't hit people in the face with your stick or, you know, if he had batted it down with his hand and then played it, it would have been legal and, you know, whatever. The puck may or may not have been 1 centimeter above the bar. It, per the spirit of the rule, he didn't really do anything cheaty. He just may or may not have been 1 centimeter above the bar. That's how I am as a sports fan. Much like on a game-deciding play, have you ever seen the people that will take to social media to go, hey, on that game-winning interception, look at this. Chandler Jones's fingertip was lined up on the ball. It should have been offsides.
Yeah,
the Vikings got screwed in that game.
They ignore.
I made up that whole scenario.
They ignore the 3 hours prior and the 1 million variables.
Well, even that play. I don't care. Even on that, if we just isolate that play, okay, his fingertips were lined up offside. Who cares? Did that affect anything, or are you just being a lawyer about this?
Yeah, and no one like. And why do we do that as people? We don't like lawyers.
No. Except we just like me. Being them.
Except for me, I love lawyers, if there's any listening.
I couldn't fall asleep without watching Jurassic Park every night, so maybe that's why I'm allowed to publicly... Nobody likes lawyers.
But we all do it, don't we? Because like we get into a comment section, or when we're talking in the car, well, technically, blah, 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 blah. It's like, why do we do that?
I hate the words "and technically."
Well, typically,
or but technically,
it's a sign that someone's about to be intolerable.
Here's some that I got into fights a lot in the NFL when they occurred because I thought, what are we? Do you remember a Monday Night Football game? The Lions were, now this is really random, so I'm preying on you being as big of a nerd as me here, but
I'm not.
Monday Night Football, the Lions are playing the Seahawks. Calvin Johnson catches a slant. He gets down inside the 2. It's the final 30 seconds. They got first and goal, but as he's falling down, he fumbles. Oh, no. The ball's going through the end zone. It's literally an inch from going out on its own. And KJ Wright walked up to it, and in a very hilariously casual way, he just taps the ball so it finishes rolling out of bounds. Like, he did it almost like he was trying to be... Like, he just walked up to it, and he went, boop, smacked it out of bounds. The extra inch. They didn't think anything of it. Seahawks came out. They took a snap at the 20. They took a knee. Game ended.
I hate that. I hate that
The
rule.
Number of people who came out afterward. And so, first of all, yes, I do hate that rule. Now, in that instance, KJ Wright could have also just grabbed the football. And
right.
It would have been Seahawks' ball. But yeah, I hate that rule. That rule is stupid. Just give him the ball at the 2. That's
but
where
you're
fumbled
right.
It.
He could have just picked it up. And then no one would have said anything about
it. Yes. Here's what people were mad about. You know, because he batted the ball in bounds, that's an illegal bat. It should be Lions ball first and goal at the 1. The Lions got screwed. I said, screwed? They almost got lucky by a technicality. They didn't get screwed. They just didn't get the fortunate break that they almost got.
Well, and then I guess, you know, I used to, I've been on the air for almost 20 years now. And I used to just roast officials in my younger years. I was mad at them all the time.
I'm still a little bit like that.
I was mad at them all the time. I felt like they were incompetent. I felt like sometimes they had an agenda. And the older I've gotten and the more I've watched, it's like, no way. They're just
occasionally bad.
They're not so good at their job that they can do those things that you accuse them of. Because it's not possible. And I guess what I'm saying is if you as a team or a person make zero mistakes and play the perfect game, and then you end up losing on a technicality because of a call, then I guess you have the right to be upset if you want. But that never happens, does it, Aaron? There is no such thing as, I played a perfect game and I did absolutely everything that possibly could have happened to help me win this game, and it's not on me, it's on the ref. It's like, well, no. How about Calvin Johnson, who's a Hall of Famer, by the way, and one of the greatest receivers of all time? How about he doesn't fumble the ball? you know what I'm saying? I don't like getting irritated at technicalities when, had he just not fumbled, it wouldn't have been an issue.
Well, and I'm kind of, depending on the situation with that too, because I just want the players to decide the game.
Yeah.
It's funny. If it had been a situation where
it's funny we're back to football. We were talking about hockey.
If Calvin Johnson fumbles the ball and one of his teammates is right on it, he's going to go recover it in the end zone, but then KJ Wright bats it out.
Yeah, that.
Then call it.
Yeah.
What? It was an inch from the sideline. What are we whining about?
It's like here? When people make a point to bring up that there is no one-inch line. Shut up. Just shut up. Nobody cares.
And then it happened again recently, too, where it was another call like that. I think it was last year. I don't remember what it was, but the internet was just up in arms about a meaningless call away from the play that should have been called, and they yelled,
well,
screwed! They got screwed! They were cheated!
Well, you know why? Because they're gambling. That's probably where most of that comes from.
I wanted to be nice, too, because I saw it about 2 weeks ago and say, you know what? I'm ragging on officials for a minute. Not really, but we're talking about, you know, bad officiating. One MLB umpire, but now Google won't give me the article again. They do the ump scorecards after each and every game. You've heard that.
Okay.
I will rag for a second. During the Cubs-Cardinals game over the weekend, we officially had the largest, I don't know what the equation does, but a part of the scorecard is run differential based on the officiating. Do your mistakes equate in our mathematical projection to runs?
Talk about nerds.
Yes.
Friggin' baseball.
The highest run differential from an umpire of the year, and Cardinals fans were all up in arms about it. But just so we're clear, the worst umped game of the year gave a plus 2.76 runs to the Cubs.
Wow.
Now, the Cubs won 7-1.
Yeah, but that's a lot of runs.
Take three of their runs away, fine, they win 4-1. What are you whining about? Anyhow, so that was funny. But we had an umpire based on what they deemed to be, you know, obviously in baseball, the rule is the umpire tells you the strike zone.
Right.
But
there's kind of an unwritten, there's a strike zone from the shoulders to the knees.
It's supposed to be from about the bottom of your chest to your knees and directly over home plate. The edge is a home plate. That should make a perfect little rectangle there. And they call that the, quote, true strike zone.
Right.
And based on the, quote, true strike zone, they will give umpires on a scorecard after every game an accuracy rating on called balls and strikes, meaning the guy doesn't swing. So it's your job. You have to tell us, is it a ball or strike? And they use that every year, and they will release at the end of the year how every umpire did on the season. And the average umpire is usually around 95 to 97. And first of all, Angel Hernandez has been the worst umpire on on that. He has been graded the worst umpire in baseball a record 8 times.
Yeah, I didn't even need you to tell me that.
Oh, just so we're clear, know what second place is? So he's done it 8 times. Second place is a bunch of ties with one, because in the history of baseball, he's the only umpire that's ever been able to return after being named the worst umpire in baseball.
And he's done it 8 times?
He's done it 8 times. What is going on there? What nude pictures of Rob Manfred does he have on his phone?
That's exactly what I was going to say.
But anyhow, and now I can't find the article again, but we had an umpire do it. We had a perfect 100% accuracy game to the true not his own personal created. I'm just being, you know, consistent, which is what we all ask for, right? Every fan always talks about, well, I just want consistency. And most MLB umpires are very good. If something's off the plate and they call it a strike, they tend to then give you that strike probably for the rest of the game. And that's fine, as long as you keep doing it. But he got the true strike zone a 100% game during some random, it was like a Milwaukee versus Pittsburgh.
Is he a robot?
It was... Imagine the eyesight on that gentleman.
I still
that ball's going 100 miles an hour, and he's like, "That's an inch in."
I still don't know how we rambled from the Avalanche sweep to that.
Oh, let's go back to Colorado. Though,
I know.
I promised I would pick Colorado in every round until they proved me wrong. I'm going to struggle a little bit after watching their last two series that they've won. If they do not fix their defense and goaltending, because Tampa Bay and the Rangers have really good both of those things, and Colorado has to this point skated by basically doing the 2013 Broncos model of just saying, well, if we just score 100 points, we'll probably win.
It almost worked.
I still feel like they really need to get that.
Well,
locked down.
Certainly, giving up that many goals is a little bit of a. But here's what's crazy: they're going to be they will get a minimum of 8 days off.
Mm-hmm.
The way things
sometimes
stand.
That works, sometimes it doesn't.
They have a potential to have 11 days off if the Eastern Conference Finals goes 7, which it could.
Now I will say this though, because I was a Blackhawks fan for many years, I have seen us sweep a series and we got like 6 or 7 days off before we played the Western Conference Final against Anaheim. We swept Minnesota and I genuinely think that it hurt us. Like, oh, we should have gone to 5 or 6 because they came out in game one. Now, we won the series. So if you win the series, who cares? Whatever. But you don't like, you know, and I'm not saying Colorado will because some teams want rest. Some teams, though, when they're in a real groove, like, I bet there's at least a couple of Avs player that if you asked them, when would you like to play game one of the Stanley Cup Finals, would tell you, well, tomorrow would be great.
Yeah, that's probably true.
So we'll see, just how they respond to it, because every team does it differently.
Here's the thing, though. So I read that, this happened just last night. Nassim Kadri, he underwent thumb surgery, which is a huge deal. I mean, the guy is a stud.
And if there's any people out there that haven't played hockey, and especially as a forward, your thumb is actually rather a massive part of your shooting.
you have a stick. How are you going to handle the stick if you don't have a thumb? But here's my thing. Obviously, I don't think it's that bad. I'm trying to look at this. But with that, is he still going to be able to come back and play? Because he might get 11 days off. I mean, 11 days, that's quite a bit of healing time. And I'm sure they looked at it and went, well, we're going to gamble. If we get the sweep, we get at least this. Yeah, go ahead and do it. That's what it felt like. Isn't that what it feels like? I don't know. I feel like they need him to be on the team if they want to win the Stanley Cup, but...
Well, as I kind of had this conversation with my dad the other day, and my parents are up here in Wyoming visiting for the week. I just got a text from them. They're off on some trail hiking up the mountain over there.
Oh.
Anyhow,
Hope they brought their bear spray. I'm just kidding. There's not too many bears around. Although I did see a thing. Sorry, but this is funny. It's bear related.
Mm.
This was in, darn it, I can't remember where it was. A guy used a trombone.
Sometimes
to scare away a bear, and it totally worked.
They would have scared me away.
The bear was like, what the heck? Anyway, so, or they can carry a trombone.
Yeah. We were discussing the Blackhawks fall off. And this is why guys like Kadri are going to be important. There's a difference between being good because you have superstars and being a championship team. And I think Edmonton just ran into this. The Chicago Blackhawks, when they were a championship team, yes, everyone thought, well, they have Crawford, they have Kane, they have Taves. We still have Kane and Taves, and they're still playing like superstars. You know who we don't have? All those second, third, fourth liners that were all contributors because we had depth across the... You need role players to win a championship. So this is a very bad time to have your very good role players get injured. But again, like you said, 8 days off, you're golden. And for a second, we're talking about getting surgery or not getting surgery. I know it wasn't a major pay-per-view, and that's normally my rule, is I just talk a little bit around. This is just going to be a quick thing. It was confirmed. I thought this was fake, because it's professional wrestling. Anything could be fake at any given time. But I thought, wow, that's some pretty good makeup they put on his chest there. Hell in a Cell, WWE's pay-per-view, took place. The main event was Cody Rhodes versus Seth Rollins inside the Hell in a Cell. It's a no rules. You have to win by pinfall or submission. You're in a giant cage. Hit each other with weapons. Use the cage. You know, it's one of those.
Yeah.
Special attraction.
It's awesome.
So Cody Rhodes. Now, in story, the commentators tell us before the pay-per-view starts, hey, our main event tonight will go as scheduled, but Cody Rhodes, and they tried to phrase it as, tore his pectoral off the bone.
Ooh.
During the, quote, beatdown on Monday, which was a scripted event for the... That was false. As it turns out, it was via weightlifting, but he did tear his pectoral muscle off its bone.
Can you imagine how bad that would hurt?
He came out and, you know, he had his big entrance robe on. It's the bit, you know, because he's a professional wrestler. And they did the very dramatic, he removed it before the bell was about to ring. And as soon as he takes it off, his whole right shoulder and chest, it's just dark purple.
Purple.
The whole thing.
Oh.
And I thought, oh, that's pretty good makeup. I literally thought it was fake the whole time. I'm like, they made that look gross. Yeah, and it broke today. Brian Alvarez reported it from Pro Wrestling Insight. No, that was real. He really did that doing, I believe it was shoulder presses in the weight room. Something went wrong. He tore his pec. It came off the bone. And then he wrestled. And you know, I guess, you know, someone told me, well, he can do that basically because he can't hurt it more. It's going to hurt.
Yeah.
He just, like, there's literally nothing that he can do to make it worse. It's torn off the bone. I'm like, okay, fine. But, like, literally, it's a no disqualification. Like, they used weapons and stuff on each other. And the stuff they were doing, I said, I like wrestling fans occasionally because sometimes they'll hijack a show and it's funny. They'll just entertain themselves with their chanting.
Yeah, they'll get on somebody and...
There's sometimes when it ruins what I'm trying to watch, though, as just a casual fan of the storyline they're trying... So Cody Rhodes was supposed to be the good guy. And now he's wrestling for my entertainment with a torn pectoral. And they're doing spots like Seth Rollins, his opponent, took a kendo stick, jammed it into his pec, you know, just so that we would get all squeamish. There was one where Cody did a cutter, which is where you grab the guy's head and you fall backwards. And he used his bad side to do it and gets up and he's doing all this stuff. There's one where they threw him into the ring post, into the bad pec. Throws him into the post and I'm going, they're doing this just so that we will react emotionally to this.
I guess.
The event was taking place in Chicago. Seth Rollins is from Davenport, Iowa, but on Twitter, he's a very outspoken Bears fan. The fans would not stop cheering for Seth Rollins the whole time. And I said, I'm like, okay, yeah, like, you can cheer for whoever you want, but you're kind of ruining what I'm watching right now. Like, this poor man is entertaining us as the good guy of the story. He's got one arm, and we're booing him for not being a Bears fan.
It reminds me of that scene in Gladiator where they're supposed to get slaughtered in the Coliseum and lose, but they don't. They win. And the emperor turns to the guy and he's like, I'm a little rusty on my history, but wasn't this? He's like, yeah, sorry about that. Kind of like that. It's like, he's supposed to be the bad guy, isn't he?
That was just weird stuff.
Well, I'm glad you're keeping up on this.
Well, thank you.
It makes me want to go back and watch it now. That's good
Maybe
stuff.
Maybe that one. I'll say if there was ever a time for a person to say, you know what, I want to get back into professional wrestling, I will just warn you right now that now is not the particular time. Because the talent level is what it used to be.
Well, there's no like huge like, you know, gargantuan names of...
Well, we got... I know this wouldn't, you know, to like an older audience, but I would say that Roman Reigns is arguably the biggest name they got now because he has family recognition in that he's related to The Rock.
Okay.
I get wrestling fans all know who he is. But
if you have to explain...
He doesn't have that crossover appeal.
If you have to explain why someone's big, then they're not that big.
Yeah. Yeah, I say the biggest problem wrestling has right now is that they definitely don't have those superstars that people that aren't wrestling fans would possibly tune in and care about. You don't have your Hulk Hogan's, your Randy Savage. There's no Stone Cold or The Rock. Even John Cena for a while, as much as wrestling fans weirdly hated John Cena, John Cena was in movies and stuff. So
I think it's funny because they like John Cena now.
See, John
Cena, I love him as Peacemaker.
Oh, he's John fantastic. Cena got a bad rap because he wrestled in a time period where he was basically the only superstar. And so as a fan, you tend to naturally have your little favorites. You're like, oh, that guy's my favorite. That guy's my favorite. And John Cena being the only superstar was always, always given the mega push to, well, he's got to be in every main event we have. He's going to win constantly. He's going to always be our champion. And then I think people just started going, okay, but I have this other favorite who's now never winning championships because John Cena keeps winning, and now I'm mad at him. Whereas, like, in the 80s, everyone got a turn.
Yeah.
They're like, we got, like, 90 superstars here. Everyone's getting... Now, Hulk Hogan still liked to hog the thing. But that's okay because Hulk Hogan had a cool theme song.
I'm a Real American.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You ever just listen to that on the 4th of July just for fun?
Yep. I listen to it on occasion when I think about it and I go, uh-huh. I am a real American.
Oh, so?
I fight for the rights of every man.
It's good stuff. It's catchy. To this day, that song is catchy, and that was written in like 1983.
As most,
a wrestling song.
As most good things are.
And it's only weird, too, because like, I like 80s wrestlers, but if I ever go back and I remember, I'm like, well, entrances used to not be quite as fun as they were when I was a kid. Like, you go back to the 80s and you listen to some of their theme songs and stuff, and it's literally like, here's Macho Man Randy Savage. And I go, oh, I wonder what his theme song was. And it was literally just the da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da. Dun, da dun, dun. It was just, you know, a nice slow. Oh, there we go. And he would just kind of walk out, wave to the crowd, then he'd get in the ring. In his Titantron, he's playing a star-spangled bannered electric guitar too.
And I'm pretty sure that's a GIF. just on a loop. Oh, man. Love that.
Or Ric Flair, who was the... it was the song from 2001, right? The...
Yeah, 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Bum, bum, bum. Yeah. And that was his whole song, and he just walked to the ring. And I went, huh. As much as I love 80s wrestlers, like watching them, because they were just... It's like all of them were on coke the whole time they were doing everything.
They might have been.
And they might have been, but boy, did it make for entertaining segments.
It did.
You ever watch the one where Randy Savage is talking about his cream and how it always rises to the top, but he sang it in such an incoherent jumble of gravel-voiced, pure electric, macho. It's just, Because right here, you see Mean Gene. It's this right here, this is me. And this is the cream. And what you need to understand is when you dump it into the cup that is our Intercontinental Championship match later, the cream is always going to rise to the top, the very top, because I am the cream of the crop and everyone else. You talk about Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. He's nothing but the water that sits on the bottom. Not like the Macho Man. No, the Macho Man is the cream, and it will rise to the top. Yeah, and he like throws cream at Gene, and then he just walks away. That's the whole thing.
I don't see how we can possibly finish any better than
That's as good as it's going to get.
That was freaking awesome.
So, tune in next week. We're on Spotify, YouTube, Podbean, and SVINews.com/podcasts. We're normally airing every... At this point, though, we're kind of sporadic. It's not always on Wednesdays now. Sometimes we throw them out a little early. Sometimes we're a little late. But it's always going to be between Tuesday and Thursday.
Yeah. Just make it a weekly bookmark, and you'll get notified.
Oh, yeah. And it'll be lots of fun.
Which I'm sure there's just millions of you doing that.
You'll get to hear me do weird Macho Man impressions for no reason.
I'm actually more impressed you came up with the whole dialogue. Because I can do a good Randy Savage, but I can't do like a 90-second monologue off the top of my head.
You know what? Macho Man Randy Savage, we claim him as a Chicagoan. So us that are from the area like to all, we claim him, we claim CM Punk, and we claim the Road Warriors. And we can all do all their best hits. There's your weird fact about... Those of us from the Chicagoland area. Tune in next week. Fight for the rights of every man. I am a real American. Fight for what's right. Fight for your life.